The tremendous chus to be reading Parshas Bo, Bezrat Hashem, this Shabbos, which is very, very exciting on many levels. And it's Yetzias Mitzrayim, Mamish. Jewish people get to leave Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Mitzrayim. This is really the story of Pesach right here. The first Pesach Seder that ever was recorded in history is in our Parsha. Actually took place before we even left Egypt, on the eve of leaving Egypt. And the very first mitzvah in the entire Torah, HaChodesh Zelachem, given to all of Klal Yisrael together. HaChodesh Zelachem, all in this Parsha. It is packed, it is loaded, there's so much to learn. And to be honest, it's very difficult to figure out what to discuss, what to focus on, and what to, you know, leave off for a different day. But we will try our best. So let's begin. Parshas Bo. Okay, so let's begin right here. In Makas Arba, we're going to discuss two with Makas Arba. Makas Arba in general has always been a difficult one for me. I feel like Makas Arba doesn't really belong where it belongs. Like they sort of, you know, the Makos progress on some type of, line of severity. They get worse and worse and worse. And you really have to ask yourself, where is Makas Arba in this entire discussion? Why is Makas Arba so bad? And if you look at, we'll begin with the second one. First, there's two points over here where you see that Makas Arba is very different than the other Makos in the reaction of Paro. Number one, Paro is... he runs. Vayimaher Paro likro l'Moshe. As Makas Arba begins and he sees the grasshoppers, you know, descending upon the land of Egypt, Vayimaher Paro likro l'Moshe li'Aron. He runs. Some say he didn't really run. He sent his messengers. But the literal translation of the pasuk is that Paro himself got up, right? A monarch, a king of Egypt. He himself got up. He ran to Moshe and Aaron, and he said, "Vayomer chatasi l'Hashem elokeichem v'lachem." I sinned. Again, last week you already said, "Ani atzadik v'ani v'ami rasha'im." Here he's running towards them. There's a need to like do this with alacrity, to stop this plague immediately. And secondly, he says to the people, he says to Moshe and Aaron, "Vayaser alai rakes hamaves hazem." Says, please remove this death from me. And it's like you have to ask yourself, what is the death? About Arba? They're cute. They're grasshoppers. Okay, when they come in a swarm, it's pretty intense. But what is so bad about this? It gets to be plague number 8. What is so difficult? So, two points on this. Number one is the Nitziv. The Nitziv writes something that other Mefarshim say as well. Is that really what the goal of Barad and then Arba were? A 1-2 punch is that Barad, you know, destroyed the crops to a certain degree. And then Arba, so when you destroy a crop, when a crop gets destroyed, so that knocks you out, right? If you are a society that's an agricultural society, which most societies were back then, it knocks you out for a year. So next year, and with the goodness of the Nile, they'll be back on their feet. But Arba takes it a step forward. It doesn't just destroy the Bara, destroy the crop above the ground. Arba destroyed when inside and destroyed the crops at their roots. And once that happened, right, Rashi writes, the Nitziv, lo achal ha'arba ela ala ha'ilanos. Right? The Ilan, the tree, and the crop, they weren't destroyed completely, but with the impending grasshoppers descending, the entire tree at its root, at its core, would completely be destroyed. Now, that doesn't set back a nation for 1 year. That sets back a nation for at least 5 years, 10 years. How long does it take to grow a tree? That takes a very, very long time. So this attack was completely to destroy the GDP of Mitzrayim. And Paro, it's a maves hazeh. It was so, so harsh that he needed to rush out and to run after them.
Rabbi.
One second, Mendy. The Midrash HaGadol adds to this is that it literally caused death because the arbed, this type of grasshopper, they poisoned the ground. They poisoned the whatever vegetation was actually left after all of this. They left poison from their mouth. Rak. Rak means only, but rok means spit. They left some type of poison on whatever vegetables were left. And these two ideas really get it to the point or the crux as to why this maka was so, so severe. Go ahead, Mendy.
So I think I remember reading this last week. I think Barad really destroyed everything except for this little piece of the crop that was still left. So technically 99% of the Egyptian economy was done. They were finished. So this was like, this was the knockout punch. In other words, they still had a little bit of hope, but this ended everything.
Right. This, again, you could get destroyed for 1 year. It could just be a really bad year. You know, gold, silver, those, they can go down for a year. But when it gets to the root, it uproots the basic, necessities of how the country runs, then that completely destroys everything. Okay, perfect. That is point number one.
Yeah, it could be also that the alba leaves eggs for a year, for 2 years, for 3 years. In other words, this alba would not only be for 1 year.
Right.
It also be coming for the future. It could destroy many of the vegetables and everything else.
Yeah, for many, many years. Yeah, 100%. 100%. Number two comes from the Balaturim and the Kli Yakar. Haro says, Mi vami hahochim, right? Who you want to leave for 3 days? You have to ask yourself that question. Who is 3 days? What is 3 days? Why 3 days? Was that a lie? Was that a ruse? Did Paro know they were actually not coming back after 3 days? What was the plan? That's a very good question to ask. But Paro says here, Mi vami hahochim? And then he answers back, Moshe says, Binareinu ubizkeinenu neilech, right? Kichag lahashem lanu. We're going with our older and our younger. We're going with everyone. Kichag hashem lanu, because this is the chag for us. So the Baal HaTurim has a great gematria here. He says to Paro says, who's coming? Mi vami, not mi ahochim. Mi vami, who and who are the hochim? So what is he really saying? Paro says to Moshe, I know. Why you want to leave? Nobody's making it out of the Midbar. All of you people are dying in the Midbar. Ki kulam yamusu b'midbar. Except for two people. Mi vami ahochim. Kalev and Yehoshua are going to survive. Just two of you. So why do you really want to go? Does it really make a difference? And in fact, Mi vami ahochim is gematria, Kalev and Bin Nun. Kalev, right? Ben Yefuna. And Yehoshua Bin Nun. So Mi vami ahochim is gematria, Kalev and Bin Nun. So Paro says, only two of you are going to make it out of here. Why do you really care to leave? So Moshe answered, Binareinu ubizkeinenu neleich. He said, we are going, Binareinu ubizkeinenu. It's not true. The gzeira in the future that Moshe is saying of the Meraglim, after Chedem Meraglim, only applies to people that were from the age of 20 to 60. But everybody over 60 and everybody under 20 is still going to make it into Eretz Yisrael. So that's Na'areinu and Zkeinenu. That's the answer, the question and answer of Moshe, according to the Baal HaTurim. Paro says only two guys are going to make it in. And he says, no, Na'areinu, our young ones, and our older ones are going to make it in, not the 20 to 60. That is the answer of
Rabbi. Are you saying Paro had Nevuah?
It seems like it, according to the Baal HaTurim. It seems like it. Or this is, again, the Torah giving a deeper meaning to Paro's message. Yes. Yeah. That is the Kli, that is the Baal HaTurim. The Kli Yakar, the great Rebbe, Rav of Prague, post-Maharal, he writes, says something very, very beautiful. He says here, I'm not going to read the whole thing. There's a lot of questions and how to analyze this. These psukim, they don't really, it doesn't really fit all the words. But what Paro is focusing on is mi vami ahochem. Why do you want everybody to leave? Moshe emphasized, right, that we want everybody to leave. And Paro said, I'll let some of the people leave. Who will I let leave? I will let the men leave. He says in Egyptian culture, in Egyptian religion, who are the people that serve God? Who are the people that worship the Ribono Shel Olam? Who does our gods care about, so to speak? He says it's the men. So, mi vami ahochem, why do you want the women and the children to come in addition to the men? That is completely unnecessary in the way that I understand religion. So Moshe understands and tells Paro, that's not how Yiddishkeit is run. That's not how we, the Jewish religion, understands everything. And really, we all celebrate. That's what binarenu biskenenu. Our children are a fundamental part of our celebration, and it wouldn't be a celebration without them. And it's a celebration with our spouses, with the women and with the men and the children. It's a family experience. It's everybody together. Ki chag Hashem lanu. He says it's a chag. A chag for us is not relegated towards one gender or one specific age. It is for everybody together. Binarenu ubiskinenu, bibanenu ubnosenu, yelchu. Everybody goes together and celebrates together with the Ribono Shel Olam. And that what makes our religion very special and very unique. That is, it's a longer piece of the Kli Yakar, but that is the crux of the message here that he is sharing. And this was what the Kli Yakar is saying, is that this was a break from the way things were done in the other cultures. In the other cultures, this wasn't true. People left their, you know, the women, they left the kids behind. That is not how we do things. We celebrate all together. Okay.
Rabbi, how does that gematria work again?
Mi vami ahochem?
Yeah, it's on those three words?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
You could do, Danny, you could do the math for me while we're going on.
Okay.
Mendy could race. Mendy into gematria too. Mi vami ahochem is gematria kalev u ben nun. I'm not sure if the vav counts. I did not count it. I'll be open about that. I did not count it. Okay, next idea. This one for me is unbelievable. Unbelievable. So it's another Netziv. And I have to thank my cousin, Rabbi Josh Hess of Linden, New Jersey, because I heard this idea about 15 years ago. I say it almost every single year in Parshas Bo, but I've been misquoting who it is. And the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos tells us that if you want to bring Geula, true redemption, to the world, you have to say Davar B'Shem Omro. So I thought this was in the name of the Be'er Yosef or Shmuel Salant, and I thought this was in the name of the Vilna Gaon. But in fact, it is a Netziv. I shared this thought with my cousin, and he shared with me, he found it inside from the Netziv. So right after Makas Choshech, right, we're going to discuss this tonight, about what is the role of the necessity to take riches, spoils, out of Egypt. Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, I need you to tell the Jewish people the following thing. Dabri na ba'ozneham, please speak to the people. Vayishalu ish meis rehu, the isha meis rusa, klei chesef, uklei zahav. I'm asking you nicely and gently and softly, please speak to the Jewish people and ask them that as they are leaving Egypt, as they're walking out of Egypt, they should borrow, they should ask, they should take klei kesef, uklei zahav, gold, silver. Other psukim say smalot, also clothing. But focus here on these words. Ish me'es re'ehu. Man should ask their re'ehu, and isha, and a woman, should ask their re'usa. What does that word re'ehu or re'usa mean? V'hafta l're'acha kamocha. What does the word re'ehu mean?
Friend.
It means a friend. So who's the friend here that they're asking of?
Good question.
No, the friend is, we know the answer. It's the Egyptians. They're asking the Egyptians, right, to borrow things. And the way that Moshe, really Kadosh Baruch Hu, frames it, he says, ask your friends. Ask your re'ehu for clothing, for gold and silver. That would be the last word that I would use to describe the Egyptians at this moment.
Rabbi, you also use the word borrow. It's not borrow, you're taking it.
Good.
So
you're right.
Why are you using the word borrow?
Yeah, well, she'ela means borrow or to lend or to take. It's a big discussion in the Mefarshim. Was this a big ruse? Were they lying? It's a fair question to ask over here. And the Mefarshim deal with this. Later on, Parshat Mishpatim, we'll learn about She'ela. She'ela means generally to borrow, but it may not mean it in this context.
Rabbi.
Yes.
So the Egyptians had a job to do in terms of the Bnei Yisrael's development. How they did it was wrong, but they contributed to their development. So you can make an argument, even though they were so harsh, but there was a positive side of this.
Mandy, if the Egyptians were just the bosses to the Jewish people and they just fired them and had to teach them a lesson and they needed to like have a whole different, you know, life lesson over here, then I really understand what you're saying. But here, they tortured them. They oppressed them. They took advantage of them. They murdered their babies. And now at the end of the story, right, after Makkah number 9, in between Makkah number 9 and number 10, we're saying they're Re'ehu. How do we understand that? So the Nitziv writes the following, and a lot of Mefarshim grapple with this language. They find the language of Re'ehu is a very, very strange or inappropriate way to describe it here, and they struggle and grapple with different approaches. The Nitziv writes something unbelievable and very shocking. The Nitziv writes the following. In Makas Choshech, the Egyptians couldn't move for 3 days. They couldn't move. That was part of the Makkah. They could not move. They were stuck in place for 3 days. So the Nitziv writes, what happened those 3 days? How'd they eat? How did they, go to the bathroom for 3 days? You know, how did they sleep? Some of them were lying down, sleeping, standing up. Like, how did they do these basic functions?
Perhaps Hashem made that they didn't have to do all those things.
Right, and I think Rabbi Lapp, you're right. I think like that's it. That would be the clue to answer that Kadosh Baruch Hu somehow, some way, made a miracle here, and they didn't need to do these basic functions. But the Nitziv says something else, very radical. He writes, El Yisrael Shahaya or Bemoshvo Sam Hoshitu Lahem Mazon V'chola Hechrachi. The Jewish people had rachmanas on their oppressors. They had rachmanas on them. And they went into their homes when they were looking for, you know, their things. They fed them. They brought them to the facilities. They took care of their basic needs. Uvazehi sigu Yisrael chen gadol b'neihem. And that's how, Milty, this addresses your question, ultimately why the Egyptians gave them or so forthcoming with giving them things as they were leaving, because they saw the Jewish people were of a different status. The nobility of Klal Yisrael was something which was not normal and was totally against their nature. And Ish Me'es Re'ehu doesn't literally mean they became best friends. They were chummy with the Egyptians after this. No, no, no. But we believe that if you do something good for somebody else, even somebody who you have a very hard time with, that creates a yachas, connection between the two people. There is a deeper connection there. That doesn't mean, again, you're going to invite them to your simcha. It doesn't mean you're going to have them over for a Shabbos meal or even give them mishloach manos. But that does mean that there is a greater connection and a deeper connection between the two of them. Klal Yisrael, at a moment where they could have taken advantage of the situation in every which way, did just the opposite. When the Egyptians would have done worse to us, when they went, we went high. We showed the nobility and the class act that Klal Yisrael was and should continue to be throughout history. We had light, and we used that light to help other people. That is an amazing thought from the Nitziv. We go on to our first mitzvah in the Torah. The first mitzvah in the Torah, it's a little bit unclear exactly what the mitzvah is. Achodesh hazeh lachem. By the way, for those that are davening at home, please remember to say Kiddush Levana. Right? If you don't have a minyan, you could still say Kiddush Levana without a minyan. It just has to be dark outside. You have to benefit from the light of the sun, of the moon, and you got to be outside. So you can't do it alone. If you want to call your neighbor over, two neighbors to do three, you can do that too. But that's a mitzvah that we should not be overlooking. So a chodesh hazeh lachem, we have the ability to makadesh the chadashim. We have the ability to determine the new months. What is the message of that first mitzvah? Why did a Kadosh Baruch Hu choose this to be the first mitzvah of Klal Yisrael? So I'll share with you three ideas from three of our great 20th century leaders. First, Rabbi Soloveitchik points out here that this first mitzvah really shows the demarcation and the difference between a slave and a free person. A slave does not have time on their own. Their time doesn't belong to them. It belongs to their master. Now that the Jewish people were becoming free, time was their own. They owned their own time. That's Achonish Zelachem. Time belongs to you. It's up to you to do right with your time. Secondly, the Nesiv HaShalom is just a great vort. He says, Achodesh Hazelachem, Hitzchadshus Hazelachem. You have the ability to continue to make yourself anew, to continue to grow and to challenge yourself and to make yourself anew every day. There might be setbacks in your life, might be setbacks as a people, but we always have the ability to, you know, press that control alt delete button to have a hard reset on our lives and to continue to be mechadesh in our lives. Third is Lubavitcher Rebbe, who says there's really three messages from this one mitzvah. He says number one is Ofen Nesina Satorah. He says number one is the word Achodesh Elachem is very unclear what the mitzvah is. And without Torah Shebaal Peh, we really would not understand this mitzvah. So you see in this one mitzvah the necessity to have Torah Shebichsav with Torah Shebaal Peh. That really you need a synthesis of both to really understand not just this mitzvah, but to really live as a Jew, as a halachic Jew, you need both together. Number two, he writes, the Koach HaTorah and the mitzvos, that what determines nature, it is Torah, it is mitzvot, it's halacha. For example, if for whatever reason there's an Ibur Shana, right, and there's an extra month this year, so a boy won't become bar mitzvah until that month later. Even though technically they've lived for 13 years on this earth, it's not yet a full time until then. They write a halacha about a woman's besulim, a young girl, that if she is, and it gets whatever, gets broken because of whatever, and then after 3 years, it will grow back, even if technically she was 3 years old, because again, it's the halacha that's koveya, sets up the reality in what we live in. And the third idea is an idea that the Lubavitch Rebbe spoke about a lot, and that is the notion that within this mitzvah of Kiddush Levana, or making the Rosh Chodesh, is the tachlis of a Jew, is the goal of a Jew, and that is that we can make anything holy. It's not just a day anymore, it's Rosh Chodesh. Today is infused with holiness. It's endowed with holiness. Who does that?
Rabbi,
that is us. One second. And that's why the bracha... Rabbi Lapp? That's why he says the bracha that we make on Yamim Tovim is Mekadesh Yisrael V'Hazmanim, that we have the ability to Mekadesh, to sanctify our days, our months, and our holidays. And that, he says, is not just true about Rosh Chodesh, about the holidays. It's true in general that anything that we do, in any way that we interact and interface with the world, it is a time for the ability to make it holy.
Rabbi?
Yeah, go ahead.
Why for this mitzvah is included the word lachem? I mean, every mitzvah is lachem, but why this one?
Why is this Mahachodesh Hazel Lachem?
Right.
This month belongs to you. So the Rav has a different idea somewhere else, where he says that Nisan...
All 613 belong to us, but why this one?
Well, we have more control over this one. You know, we have the ability to make the months. Mekadesh Yisrael V'Hazmanim. So we have more input into when this is going to happen. When do we... when is Pesach going to happen? So that, to a certain degree, Klal Yisrael's input into that, because we have Eidos HaChodesh. You know, that's why this mitzvah has that extra.
So we're controlling all the Yom Tovin, etc.
To a certain degree, yes.
Yeah, right.
Okay. To a certain degree. There are other mitzvahs that have this idea of Lachem too. And by there, it means you have their ownership. For example, by the mitzvah of lulav, it has to be ulakachtem lachem. You have to own your lulav.
But that's to differentiate between you and your neighbor, that it should be your property as opposed to this mitzvah.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Great question.
Okay. Rabbi.
Yeah.
Two things. With Purim coming up, and since the Suda is going to be on a Friday, in the past, a while back, you gave a share on this. Is it possible to do it this year again? You know, how you would implement the Purim Suda together with the Friday night Shabbos meal.
Ooh, all right. Yeah, when we're learning Avri Pesachim. So, Bezrat Hashem, to February 8th, we're going to do a town hall Q&A for Purim this year. It's a very unique Purim because of... it's on a Friday, and we're in the middle of a pandemic. And it seems like 3 weeks ago, I was hopeful that most people would be getting their vaccine, their second vaccine, at least a week or two before Purim. That is unlikely. It's not possible at this point. So we're going to talk about, you know, procedures, protocols, also halacha that is mitigated by the pandemic and by Purim being on Erev Shabbos. So that's going to be like a nighttime. People can, you know, send in questions, and we'll discuss it together.
Right. The other point I wanted to make, you talk about numbers. Bo is 2 + 1 = 3, which are the three makos in this week's parsha, right? But the era, if you add it up, I think it's 208, which is 10 for the 10 plagues in general. And COVID-19, unfortunately, is 1 + 9 is also equal to 10. So there's a lot of symbolism that's going around.
Okay.
Mandy, you have too much time on your hands.
No, my mind is trained to be a steel in numbers.
Right, I know that.
Everybody, Ashikoch, everyone. Wish everybody a great
Shabbos. Have a great Shabbos. Thank you.
Have a good day. Enjoy.